2024 is the year of podcasts, and we want to let you know about a brand new show that is live right now. Join with me to share the good news about the Worthy of Everything podcast. It's just one of the two hosts, Jedra Lasso. Jedra, you've been working on this podcast in the background. Our team has been very excited as we've been preparing for its launch. How does it feel to know that the episodes finally are out there and we're moving forward every single week?
It is so exciting, and I am just excited to see where God takes it. And I have so much hope that it is going to be an incredible blessing to the listeners.
Amen, amen. But as I understand it, this is a show tackling the issues of mental health through the lens of the gospel. Can you share just a little bit more about the heart and the intent and who you're really trying to serve through the Worthy of Everything podcast?
So I personally was freed from depression, and as I've come to understand my freedom from sin and identity in Christ, I start to recognize all these amazing gifts that God has given us. So yeah, just exploring and hearing awesome testimonies about how to walk out true intimacy with a loving father who pursues his kids.
Oh man, sounds like a good time. If you want to check out the show, lovereality.org/podcasts, and look for the Worthy of Everything show.
Death to Life is brought to you by Loved Reality, a good gospel ministry. Our mission is to tell everyone willing to listen that in Christ, by faith, they are free from sin. Everything that we make is made possible because of the generosity of people like you. Thank you.
The world doesn't think that the gospel can change your life, but we know that it can. And that's why we want you to hear these stories, stories of transformation, stories of freedom, people getting free from sin and healed from sin because of Jesus. This is Death to Life.
There was times when I was thinking, like, how can I literally get more even with God? Like, get back at God? How can I be more evil? How can I be worse? Just like the worst headspace you can imagine, thinking about making prayers for power and money and just really weird, dark stuff that I started getting into. So for me to think that my heart is completely changed to an aspect where I can't even fathom being a human being anymore, that miracle of changing my heart was by far greater than any earth-defying miracle I think you could have showed me. And wow, it has absolutely blossomed my life.
Yo, welcome to the Death to Life podcast. My name is Richard Young, and today's episode is with my brother, Austin. And if you listened to last week's episode, you heard Christina. Austin is a bit of a different story. Austin grew up somewhat in the church, but then quickly hated it and was not only against God, but wanted to become evil. If you hear the story, it's kind of wild. And life had no answers for him. His answers had no answers for him. And he was stuck in a vicious cycle of sin. And to see that turn around, to see the alcoholism go away, to see the occult stuff go away, and just to see that because he was loved, he actually saw it, man, so powerful. So this episode, if you hear this guy's heart, he does not like to get up and share from what I remember, but he said, I need to share my story. And so you're going to love this episode with Austin. Buckle up, strap in. Love y'all. Appreciate y'all.
So let me ask you this, man. You've heard one or two of these episodes, right?
Oh, yeah. I think I went on like a binge tour of probably 50, 60 episodes back in January, February, March, and April. Like every day at the gym, it was no longer music. It was Death to Life every single morning for 4 months. It was awesome.
What episode has stood out to you that, I don't know, that resonated with you maybe more than others?
Oh, that's a good question. There's actually a couple. Hold up. I have a favorite. I'm so bad with remembering their names. One was a basketball player, Michael, if that
Loomis
sounds right. Loomis.
Yeah,
yes. Loomis. His was really good. And then my favorite one, hold on, let me find this just because I liked it so much. Sorry. Oh, Jake Hodgkiss. I think that episode 59.
So Jake gets free like from the OK days. You like guys that are thinkers.
I like, I don't know how to explain it. Trust me, I love the situations and actual events that unfold to leave these things, but the people that have trouble rationalizing concepts, because that's where I was stuck for such a long time too, I think I just like to hear even other outside perspectives of where other people viewed what they were taught from an early age growing up and how they viewed God. So I hear their different perspectives, and yeah, I get real ingrained into those types of stories. So I don't know if you know, but yeah, I love those too.
I love Jake.
Yeah.
Man, he's been such a blessing to me and had me thinking about things in a way I haven't thought about him before. And I think he's also just like, he's a pastor. Like, he's ministered to me on just a personal level and just called me up, and just as brothers, we can be like, hey man, how's it going here? How's it going here? So that's awesome. Yeah, man. So where do you feel like your story begins? Cause usually when I'm talking with somebody, they have a spiritual background or something like that. I have no idea about your background. Maybe you had a spiritual background, maybe you didn't. So where do you feel like your story starts when it comes to any kind of spiritual identity or lack thereof?
Yeah, for sure. Surprisingly, I was raised extremely Christian, Southern Baptist. Went to church every Sunday, every Wednesday, did a Awana's vacation Bible school. You name it, we did it even at home. So I was always around it and taught it growing up for sure. But I can't express how different of an area apparently I lived in out in the country, but it was all about rules with these Southern Baptists. All we wanted to talk about is this is what you got to do, this is what you don't got to do. That's every Sunday. This is what's not okay, this is what's okay. And that's a very nice way of explaining the harshness of the way they put it. But that was essentially the concept that we got fed. So I don't think I ever had an attachment. I thought it was just like something that was part of life. That makes sense. It was like another school. It's another activity, another sport. It's just something you did with some of your free time. There is definitely never a connection or a love or any emotional attachment to my spiritual learning. But yeah, grew up, got baptized. When people just said, yeah, that's a super religious family, which is crazy because I don't think we were looking back, to be honest. But
what part of the country did you grow up in?
Northeast Colorado. So a small little farm town called Wiggins is the city I grew up in. Or it's not a city, it's a town, 900 people, and went to church with about 42 people of the town and for years. And a nice little country town out in Colorado. Loved growing up on the farm.
God was rules then.
Yeah, for sure. That's how, either that or that's just how my mind interpreted it, because I've just always been so rule oriented about everything. So maybe that's just how I perceived it, but that's how it felt.
What did he think about you?
Oh, I was a subject. There was God, and then there was humans, and then the devil. We're like tier two. We're fighting in to see if we go with devil or God. It's just, there's a 50-50. It's just like a war, 50-50 chance. There was no connection or attachment. It's just, that's God, that's the devil. Try to pick your side by what you like more. See if you can act appropriately. It was pretty bleak.
Did you feel like you wanted to pick God, or that you had picked God, and so you're like, okay, I'm safe, or how did you feel about God?
I just wanted to live forever, to be honest. I know that sounds terrible, but in my mind, I was like, I just don't want to die. So if the options are not dying and dying, I'll take not dying. So I'll choose the side of God, even though I think his rule is, from what I've been taught, are ridiculous, and he doesn't really love me, and it's not that great of a deal, but it's better than dying. So out of self-survival, which is like the worst spot to root your faith in, I chose God.
I think that's pretty natural, right?
Yeah, I would say too, but I think now, knowing what I know now, there's just a lot better reasons.
Yeah, so how did that manifest in just either your behavior or what it was like growing up?
Yeah, I think it was exacerbated at home. I grew up with a great family life from what I remember and believe. Of course, there's always faults, but grew up with very loving parents, loving brothers, all that type of stuff. But we were also a very rule-oriented family. My father was extremely strict, extremely rule-oriented, he was the head of the household, and it was very obvious. So I think I grew up in that type of environment well, and it exacerbated the issue. In high school, I became an absolute rebel and heathen. And that's when, I think around 17 is when I just detached from the church, religion, all that type of stuff. And I said, I'd rather just have fun in my life and die. I remember like making that switch to that mentality of, I'm not going to get to heaven. God does. He's not going to choose me. I'm not going to get loved. So like, I literally remember thinking, I'm just going to have as much fun as I can before dying. And that means sinning in my mind. And around that age, and that just took off on a bad trajectory for a while in high school.
Wait, hold on. What led to the rebelliousness? Do you remember like how that started?
Yeah, I just remember feeling burnt out of rules from my household, from my school, from what I have to do after school, to college, to life, to God. And I just felt like I realized my own mortality was just, years were going by. I had 60 years left on earth. And I was like, man, I'm not living how I want to live. And I just got like a preteen life crisis at a very young age, I feel. And I just went off the deep end. I was like, I'm going to do me.
So what were your first choices that you wouldn't have done this before? Yeah. And you're like, now I'm doing this.
Yeah. So I shaved all my hair off except for a ponytail just on the back of my head because I knew it would upset people.
I'm going to live it my way now. In your face world.
Yeah. Started wearing really metrosexual clothes, like at the time is what it's called, but started dressing extremely different, started getting a bunch of tattoos, started getting into tobacco, alcohol, some minor drugs and stuff like that. Just literally looking for any outlet to say, I'm not supposed to be doing this. And I would do it like almost in spite, just to go out, just to be, I don't know, just in a bad spot where that's where I thought I was going to have fun and do what I wanted to do until I died. So if it was offered or it was an ability, sadly, I was open to pursuing it.
At some point, did you actually believe God doesn't exist? Or were you just, I don't like this mm-hmm. person, so I wish he didn't?
Yeah, so in my mid, it's crazy for all the stuff that I went through. I never doubted that there was a God, which is nice. I always knew it was there, but it turned to anger in my low 20s, for sure. It turned into, I can't stand this is the world that how it is. This is how the rules how they are. I can't stand that God put us in this situation. And then it for sure turned into me accepting God's not the God I want to serve. This is just bull crap. And I'm good with dying and it being over forever. It turned into that in my young 20s. And with that mentality, anything and everything was open. So yeah, I definitely believed in God. I couldn't stand him. Didn't want to hear him. I didn't want to hear any music about him. I didn't want to hear any hymnals. I didn't want to hear Bible verses. Like the second I heard the word God, it started to repulse me to an unhealthy and disproportionate degree when anyone would even bring it up.
And so we were talking about rules that were doing this. Was it basically mm-hmm. that, the rigidity that was yeah. such the thing you were pushing back against so hard?
Mm-hmm. And I just felt like it was impossible for me to follow them. I just felt like, I will not accomplish this goal or this task that has been set before me. So why am I trying? And I don't know, like a lot of people go 10, 20, 30 years trying. I gave up early. I realized like this ain't happening. There's got to be another way or this ain't happening because I don't foresee a future in that. And so I couldn't stand it. And then lo and behold, I go into the military where rules are magnified 100x. And I feel like that exacerbated the issue even further. Now, all I was begging for was freedom and some ounce of self-identity and my own. And I think that those three sets of rules I was living out between my father, the church, and the military, I think, yeah, it definitely drove out an inner want to do anything but what I was told.
So how was your, after you start this rebelliousness, how did your life seem to be going? Did it make you happier in that moment, do you feel?
Oh, yeah. In the moment, for sure happier because I was doing anything and everything I wanted. So I was getting the drugs I wanted, drinking as much as I wanted, bouncing girls if I wanted, going out partying, doing things I shouldn't be doing, watching things I shouldn't be watching, talking the way I shouldn't be talking, all those types of things. In the moment, yeah, I felt great. I was on top of the world, but little did I know that I was damaging my health. I was damaging my finances to severe degrees. It was damaging my relationships with my family, with my friends. And those things just didn't feel real at the time, but they were definitely happening. But I felt good. And that was all that was important to me at the time.
How long until the consequences start to show up?
Yeah. So I would say right when I got out of the military is when the consequences started to show up, because now I no longer had a guaranteed job, didn't have a guaranteed, not support group, but people around me that were there for me. Technically, I was out on my own and in the
did
real
you
world.
Hate the military, or did you like? Oh yeah, joined it. And you're just like, this is the worst.
No, yeah, could not stand it. I could not stand it. I cannot believe. Like, I'm so glad I did. Proud of all the stuff that I did. Good memories. I was a great soldier. Got a good accolades and all that. But I cannot believe I joined. It just was so far from what I thought I wanted at the time. But now looking back, I'm really glad I did. But yeah, I hated it. So there was zero chance I was staying in.
What branch of the military were you in?
I was in the Army. I was Airborne Infantry. So that's MOS 11 X-ray option 40 for anybody to know.
So did you get deployed? Did you see any combat? Yeah. Like,
yeah. So when I first got in, I got so fortunate and lucky, and I got stationed to Vicenza, Italy. So I got to do 2 years in Italy at their base, and then 1 year in Grafenwöhr, Germany. So I was ready to do 20 years. I was like, this is the best time of life. And then I got sent back to the United States, where I did Fort Bragg, and it was the worst military base and installation experience for a year. So it got me enough that I got out the very next year. And then I went to contract in Iraq and Afghanistan overseas, and was part of an aerial surveillance team that would go out and recon and see what's going on. So I was able to get to do a lot of traveling to a lot of different countries. I think 19 in total, which was really nice.
So how many years were you in there?
5 years.
So that's from 18 on, or?
Yep. About 18 and a half to 23 and 24. Yeah. Right around that time frame.
So what was your plan? Like, when you get out, what was life? What was your hope for your life?
I know this is so dark to think back, but I had no plan. There really was not. It, in my mind, everything was just going to be okay, but there was no plan. It was just, yeah, we'll go to college and find a job type thing.
So did you end up going to college?
No. And I should have said, before I went to the military, I went to college in Colorado. I did grade the first semester. Second semester, I got in everything I was supposed to do, and so I failed out. I went to the military, did 5 years. Now, when you get out of the military, you get to go to college for free. The blessing of going to college for free financially is just unreal. So I get out and I go back to college. I do 2.5 years, doing great, 3.9, and boom. I fell off the cliff. It's when the deep end started. I fell off the cliff, got a 0.9 GPA. I got ineligible for all my classes, didn't show up for an entire 6 months. The dean called me and said, you're done.
What led to the falling off the cliff? You were doing so well.
Yeah, I was motivated. I was for a couple of years, and I know this sounds terrible, but I met this girl. I'd been seeing her for a couple of years, and things were very rocky, up and down. And I got a lot of my identity in her and my life at the current time. And I think a lot of things that would go up and down would also be reflected in my school and real life. And it got to a certain point where I was just done. I didn't care anymore. I was done with trying for life. I wasn't going to graduate. I wasn't going to get a job. I just started piling on massive amounts of debts, taking out credit cards, taking out loans, you name it. I would do it. Like anything just to feed myself and get by, but I did not do a dang thing.
So this relationship with this young lady fell apart. Did that, and were you just depressed after that, or was like, were you guys still together? And it was,
no, we were off and on so many times. I can't remember type thing, but I just know the good and bad was so few and far between. It was so high, and then it was so low with our highs and lows that I don't know. And I was a significant part of that issue and problem. I was the one causing these issues and problems looking back, but I would inflict this terrible damage and have to try to repair and fix it, and then just feel just defeated, lost. And I just kept thinking of everything. I'm going to die. 10 more years has gone by. Nothing has happened in my life. I'm going to die even sooner. I don't care about the job, the school. I just had this idealistic point of view of what's the point of anything. And for about 6 months to a year, I just stopped everything. I didn't leave my apartment. I remember this is about a 3 week period where I didn't open my mouth to talk. I talked to someone in 3 weeks. I remember hearing my voice in the morning when I coughed or groaned, and I was like, oh, that's crazy. I haven't heard a voice in a long time. And it was my own, which is not a healthy way to deal with that depression by sitting inside your apartment. But yeah, I just ordered food, didn't come out, didn't leave, didn't do anything. Just sat there and rotted for a while.
Wow. What got you out of that, man?
I would say debt collectors coming, failing out of college, debt collectors coming, couldn't pay bills, didn't have a place to live. So nothing at that point got me out. I packed everything up in my car. I had a lot of stuff, and I only had a 4-door car. So anything I packed in my car was important enough for me to keep. I guess everything else I threw in the dumpster. Like every single possession I owned was in the dumpster. If it didn't fit in a car, that's so much stuff. Like 80% of my stuff just gets trashed and thrown away. And I pick up all my stuff, get in my car, and I'm like, I'm homeless now. I live in my car. I was like, all right, I'll see if my parents would take me on. I drove from Florida to Colorado and lived in my parents' basement. And I was like, all right, I'll find a job here in my local town, and this will be it for me. And
how did your parents handle that? Were they just happy that you were safe? And
they knew, because it was so bad that I hadn't been talking to anyone. My mother flew down to see me without telling me randomly during that year period, just showed up at my front door because they knew something was bad. And so when I told them I was coming home to get essentially clean and figure my life out, they were actually relieved, because I think that they were like, if someone doesn't help him or someone doesn't, something is going to get real bad. So I think they were relieved. That I know that it would have been a permanent thing for them, I'm sure, but they were relieved. So it was a welcome home, which I think I'll forever be grateful for. It's really nice.
And so you're like 24, 25 at this point?
Yeah, 25-ish. Living downstairs, trying to find a job. Went and found a job making, I think it was $11 an hour as a security guard at a meat packing plant. And was getting yelled at by people all day because I was telling them not to bring knives in, and they were yelling at me, screaming. And I was like, dude, this is crazy how drastic life's changing. This is not what I wanted to be doing, type thing. So I did it for 4 days. I quit. And then I got on and said, I'm going overseas. I said, I got to get out of debt. I'm willing to go live in the worst conditions. So I found 12 hours a day, 7 days a week job in Iraq, paying good enough money to help me start paying off debts. And I would just have to be over there for a year. And so I told everybody, I'm like, I got to go get my life figured out. So I dropped the packet and headed out over there. And that's when the withdrawal started, because there's no access to drugs over there, no access to alcohol, all that kind of stuff. So I went out to work the United States military and or Department of Government in Iraq, going through withdrawals in a tent in 117-degree heat, just writhing around. This is the worst decision ever, having to work 12 hours and then go again the next day. So that's how I eventually started to climb myself out, was that decision. So I did that for the year, paid off all my insane debt that wasn't crushing me. And then while I was over there, I reconnected with the girl that I was talking to with UCF, which you all later find out that ends up being my wife, Christina. But we had been known each other for years at this point, like 4 years. And we start talking again. And I think a big part of the story too is, mind you, that she was religious and she was an Adventist, which I didn't know at the time, but Adventists at that, from what I learned earlier, had a lot of rules too. There would seem to be even more rules than what the Southern Baptists had. And I'm like, oh man, here we go again. So I told her, I'm good with you having it. I just don't want to hear a word, single word. I remember she would, bless her heart, she would try to put on a, it'd be she called it the Sabbath. And I'm like, Saturday's not church, Sunday football day. But anyway, she would say Sabbath, Saturday. She'd put on a gospel music. I'd have to turn off the radio. I'd shut it off. I would get irate. We would get into fights about it because I couldn't even hear it. I could not even listen to it, which is so sad. But anyways, I started connecting with her again in Iraq. And she was dropping hints here and there that she wanted me to change too. She was hoping on this change with me. She stuck by me with 4 years of fighting and ups and downs and a lot of stuff. But while I was over there, we were trying to rekindle it, type thing. And we did for a couple months long distance, but then again, it fizzled out. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to stay over here forever and work the rest of my life over here. I finally had gotten clean, dropped a bunch of weight, was getting my life in order. I was like, okay, I can start to see things start looking up. And then boom, me and her went off the deep end again. I was like, all right, I just saw myself going back into a dark hole. But then right around the end of it, right before COVID happened, so another year, I contact her and figure out we're going to try again. And so I was like, all right, I got to get home. And thank goodness I did, because right before COVID hit, I got on a helicopter to get out. But then COVID hits and all these new restrictions came in place and nobody was up to leave or enter the country like half a year. So thankfully I got out when I did, so I could go home and try to rekindle things with her. And the first part is when I get home, we stop talking again. Another thing happens. We get into another big fight and we stop talking again. It's just this perpetual, terrible fight sequence. And I get home to Colorado and I start my first civilian, actual, real job, get my own apartment. And I'm like, all right, I got my life somewhat on the right place. Still have a bunch of debt. Still have a bunch of stress and all that kind of stuff. But at least I got things somewhat going now and what I appear to have things going. And then I was back to alcohol again. Started drinking 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. like I normally do. I can't stress that I'd wake up, take a shot just to get the day going, then just drink Jim Beam throughout the entire day. Never like blacking out drunk, but just enough to make me forget about my existence and the mortality and death and how much I hated my life and how things weren't going out. Went to the, for about a year, went to the old 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. drinking daily, every day, you know, 65 days a year. It was terrible.
So, and then, Iraq, you got dry, like you got completely dried out?
Got completely dried out. Yeah. Doing so good. Felt happy. Felt good. Felt healthier. And not a week back, right back in that liquor store.
So it wasn't really about, it was just like, this is the way you're going to be able to cope with your life.
Yes, you nailed it on the head. I told myself that we can't handle life. I told myself you can't handle that. This is life and you're going to die and this is how it goes. So let's just numb it up until that point comes and try to be happy. And so, yeah, that was the philosophy for a super long time.
So you would go to work just a little buzzed and just be at work?
Just a time, yeah. Yeah.
And just keep it up all day long, but moderating it?
As long as I wasn't at the office. And then when I was at the office, I wouldn't play that game because it's the strangest thing. I was the safest alcoholic in the world. I refused to drink and drive type thing. I would always make sure someone would drive me. And if someone wasn't driving me, I would just not be able to drink. And I would allow myself to be upset and go through a withdrawal. I would not. It's just, it was a standing pillar of mine that I could not do it because I knew that would set me too far back in what I thought in my mind. So I was like, as long as I don't drink and drive, it's okay. I would find other ways.
And so you never did?
Nope. Thankfully. Never got a DUI, but I did had to go to and go to alcohol, substance abuse, and therapy course because one day at work, they sent me in and I had to test for all that kind of stuff. And they're like, all right, you got to go to a course. So I had to pay money out of pocket to go to a course. And that was, I was like, you know what, maybe this might be good. Maybe therapist or something like that might help. I went there and wasted absolutely 4 weeks of my life. I feel like it did more harm than good. It just was not a good experience. So as soon as that was over, right back to it and back to the norm.
What was your bottom line belief about alcohol? Were you like, I wish this wasn't a part of my life? Or did you not even think that was a possibility?
Despised it. Yeah. I was mad that I knew it. Like you said, you nailed it on the head. I'm telling you, I would tell myself, I was like, we just need this to numb ourselves to get by. I remember telling myself that. Screaming up at my ceiling at my apartment in Brighton saying, show me a miracle. Right? Because that's, I don't know, I've never said this, but that was the running thing I would always tell Christina is, until I see a defying miracle, until I see physics, world-made physics defy type miracle, I'm not going to believe God's looking out for me and wants to talk to me, reach me, that kind of stuff. I can't be sure of all the stuff that I've been told. I need something to fight. I just stare at my ceiling and scream, show me a miracle. Just show me one blank miracle type thing. And then just swig alcohol right after and be like, yep, we're not getting a miracle. So I'm going to do what I want if he doesn't want to give me what I want type thing. Forcing these weird ultimatums on the God that he had nothing to do with in the first place.
So what happened next, man?
Yeah. So then I headed down a real bad path until one day, I don't know exactly the day. You might know the day better, but anyways, I finally rekindled with Christina again, and we had the rule that I'm going to drink for the rest of my life, and I'm not going to talk about God for the rest of my life because I can't stand any of her values. I haven't seen a miracle. I don't want any things to deal with. I mean, I was brutal to her over these times, truly brutal to her, a scary person. Did some serious stuff, and she just hung in there. I don't want, but she kept trying, and then one day, I cannot explain the severity of the situation, but when I talked to her, something had changed there. I've known this girl at that point for 7 years now. I knew her for a really long time. And we were just talking. And I remember me being overly mean for something very small and her patiently like taking a step back from a fight, which she never would do, and just saying, it's okay. I love you and you're perfect. And when you haven't been used to that type of fight for 7 years, to hear that was so offsetting. I was like, what the hell does that mean? It almost made me more angry. Like, what kind of mind game is this you're trying to pull? You just want to be done with the fight? Is that what you're trying to get out of? And so anyways, I go back into her and she keeps up the same mentality and attitude. And a week goes on and I notice it more and she's just happy. She's genuinely happy and seems to be acting different, seems to be carrying herself different. And I was like, what is going on with you? And she tells me about this love reality tour. And I instantly start like cringing up inside. I'm like, oh no, here comes the next wave of whatever religious hokey pokey she's got going on that she's going to try to teach me about.
And you guys were just homies at this point, or were you like considering dating, considering like what was it?
Yeah, I think we were more than homies at this point. I think we were technically dating again. It was just, I think we were technically dating again. I'm not sure on that. It was so scattered. I'm talking like 15 to 20 plus times we were girlfriend versus friends, boyfriend. So it's so bad. I can't even tell you, man. It's so bad.
What was it about her that you're just like, what is it? What movie?
Yeah.
Couldn't leave.
She was mesmerizing. First of all, she is hella wicked smart. Just wicked smart. She was going to grad school, got her DPT. I knew she was intelligent. We had deeper conversations than I did with other partners or significant others. She just was able to intellectually challenge me and tickle my fancy and was just very like-minded when it came to that conceptual type of stuff. And I absolutely loved it. And she was hella funny. I wasn't a big laugher about other people and stuff, but she actually generally made me laugh about stuff that I thought was funny. She had a way to take my own humor. She will learn your humor and she'll create jokes with your humor, for your humor, for you. It's not her humor. She like knows how to tailor make that stuff for you. So I was hooked beyond belief. I didn't admit that to myself at the time, but those hopes were so deep in me that I knew I loved this girl. I think even if it was a terrible, unhealthy, toxic situation, deep down, I at least knew I enjoyed her presence and company. So I think that's why I was kept coming back.
So she tells you about the Love Reality Tour. What do you remember what she said about it?
Yeah, she used the terms, I'm free. And I'm like, I just hear more jargon and more lingo. And I'm like, what the hell does this mean? And she just tries to go and explain it. I'm like, no, I don't. Cool. That's cool. That's so great. I remember just being so zoned out. I was probably playing a video game or something. I was like, yeah, you are free. God does love you. That's awesome. That's crazy. And just put it off. I didn't really think of anything of it. Anyways, we start going about our lives and she is noticeably different. It is noticeably different. And I'm like, it was almost frustrating for me. And then one day she's, we're going to Nebraska. And I'm like, I'm going to Nebraska. She's like, the roads are really bad because it's snowing and raining and I need you to help drive me there. And looking back, she told me she just wanted to get me there. But in my mind, I was like, oh, I'll be the macho man. I'll drive you through the rain and sleet and snow. And I was like, all right, let's go. And at that time, I'm still drinking heavy, like still angry at God, drinking heavy, not a good person, do not have just ready to die type mentality. And so we drive all the way to Nebraska. And turns out it's just this. And I thought it was this big church sermon that I was going to type thing. Nope, it's this close knit group of friends. And everyone's in a good mood and everyone's happy and everyone seems to be at peace. Like the worst place in the world to bring someone who hates themselves and hates their life. And so I get to pull up and see her interact with the people that told her the good news and get to learn that about everybody. And I remember absolutely despising it. Absolutely despising it. I did not have a good time. I did not like the people. I went to the hotel room, was drinking heavy at the hotel room there. Like it was wild.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and I'm going to introduce you to my friend, Misha. Misha, how long have you been rocking with Good Gospel?
For around 2 years.
2 years? How did you get introduced to this gospel?
Well, my best friend, Savannah, found you guys and she told me that I needed to get onto the Bible studies and I never did. And then I finally did just get on. And then I loved you guys ever since. And yeah.
That's awesome. I remember seeing you on there for the first time. What has this revelation and understanding of how good the gospel is, what has it done in your life?
It transformed it. I was living in anger and in lust. And now I live in love and in truth.
Oh, Just the transformation, you hearing the gospel that transforms people's lives, just transformed your life? That's it?
Absolutely.
I love that. So you've gone to the next level and you actually donate to the ministry, you donate to the Death to Life podcast. What has motivated you to give some of your finances to keep this movement going?
Love. Love motivated me. Just that to love others is to give. And what you guys put out the gospel, and it's just like I 100% back it up in everything. So it's like, why wouldn't I not give to this?
Man, you're a testimony. That blessed me so much. Thank you so much, Misha. I love seeing your life lived. I love seeing how you pour into people, and you're a blessing and a testimony to us. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Maybe you don't remember this, but from hearing this later, this is fun for me. So you have to hear me. When we're all in this, like it's the middle of COVID, and we wanted to get a bigger venue, right? And we had met Christina online, and so she's bringing her friend Austin, and you come in there, and you're noticeably unapproachable.
Yeah.
But then you're just sitting there, and I remember you sat next to my wife. Do you remember what happened here? Can you tell my part of the story?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember sitting next to her, and she was like, just some of her demeanor didn't match mine, but it was more similar to mine than other people. She seemed more reserved than other people. And we just had a one or two sentence passing, I think, talking about something. And I was like, oh, thank goodness, another normal person. And she said, I'm actually part of this process. That's why I was getting speaking in there. And I'm like, oh, no, there's no safe haven in this place.
Yeah, because like she started to testify, I remember.
Yes. And I was like, oh, and it was just as impactful and deep. I was like, no, she's just with them. Yeah, I do remember that. That's funny. That unlocking memory that I forgot I had there.
I don't know if we met. I think I was like, I don't know if we met at all. Or maybe I said, hey, nice to meet you.
Yeah, we don't. I think we talked in there. I think it might have been on purpose, too. I can't remember if it was on purpose, based on mindset, but I'm telling you, I don't know if Christina ever told you this, but I remember the first couple Love Reality Friday night like worship sessions that there are. I could not stand you. I know that sounds awful, but you came on with your podcast mic and you're spitting facts and talking stuff. And I like purposely you out of everybody. I know it's on the tribute testament now looking back, but then it was probably a good sign. But right now, at the time, I was like, man, I can't stand Rich. And I told Christine after the call, I was like, oh yeah, everyone's nice except I don't like Rich. And she said, what did he even say or did you? And now it's like, I want to apologize. I'm sorry, man. I judged you way too early. You're one of the funniest memes. Content Christian creators I know on the game today, and I misjudged.
Well, what was it, man?
You and your wife seem the most, I know, not normal, but you guys seem the most from where I came from. You guys seemed more similar in your attitude, demeanor, confidence, and presence from my background than anyone else there. So I thought I was going to be able to relate with you two more, or at least I'd be team Rich and your wife, and it ended up not being that way. And so it was like, whatever, dude, even beyond you. You think you're cool, you'd be on that team too, then. Yeah, I think that was the case. I was mad that I was like, I somewhat saw myself being same age as you, probably do the same things like sports, all that. And I was like, yeah, and he's on board with this program. I think it made me mad. I was like, even what I perceived as cool guys are switching over type thing. So yeah, I was mad at you and you didn't even know.
I love it, bro.
Yeah.
So you go back to the hotel room and you're hitting it hard just because you're just mad.
Yeah, just mad, man. Because at that point, it was starting to get mad that I didn't have what you guys had. That's when it started feeling, I was like, I told Tyler what I wanted to do. And he was, yeah, it's okay, man. I love you. Like, don't beat yourself up for it. It's okay. And I was like, everyone's giving me these same responses of just patience and kindness and some love. And I'm like, God, I wanted someone to yell back or fight or argue or prove me right that you're going to do something bad. Which even if they did, looking back, it shouldn't have mattered. But yeah, that's the goal, right? If someone who doesn't believe or is angry. We want retaliation. We want you guys to lose it. We want you to come down to this level because we can't come up there. There's no way. We're not coming up there. So we have to bring someone down to our level to do the little warfare on. No one would do it. And so I leave more frustrated than ever.
Were you mad at Christina or were you just
like... I think I loved her so much that I wasn't like picked her. But yeah, I was mad at her. And I think she was not frustrated at me, but she was trying to help me this whole time. And I just was refusing. And I was mad at her for... trying to push it so hard, but yeah, I'd give it to her. I'd let her know that she's pushing too hard. There's not things I want to do. And I was very sharp and mean probably about it. But yeah, I definitely knew she was doing it on purpose now. This was not about the rain.
So there's this point during the weekend and you were just mentioning it, but it's a funny story to me. You were really trying to push people a little bit so that they could get angry with you, right? And then you have this conversation with Tyler. Do you remember this? Because we've talked, your story is a big deal to us. And so we've actually talked about this and shared this with other people. Do you remember what you said to him? I've heard this story so many times.
No, I'm trying to remember. What I wanted to do, it was like, if I want to be honest with you, Tyler, what I want to go do right now, is it that conversation or no?
It's that conversation, but you had said something about how all of us are the same. Like, we're all on the same page, and you were trying to pick off one of us.
Yes. That's what the frustrating part was, because I haven't encountered a religious body or group that was like that yet. Everyone had their own interpretation, so drastically different. I was like, okay, what about this that you follow, but he doesn't follow? And then when there's that ambiguity between them, I'm like, you guys don't even have a set law or a set of rules. It's over. You guys, this is flawed. I proved it. It's not consistent. Good enough for me. Wrap up, show, go home. But you guys weren't listing out a set of rules for me to follow. It was much different. And you guys were all on the same page about the path that you guys followed, not a set of rules type thing. And so it was impossible to pick off something that was a unanimous agreement.
So tell us what you told Tyler that you wanted to do and what your response was to that.
All to Tyler, and Tyler's like, you having a good time here? And I'm like, not really, Tyler. He's like, yeah, what's going on, man? I'm like, bro, to be honest with you, I just want to save some custards in front of you guys, go outside, smoke a cigarette, go back, get hammered, and watch whatever I'm watching, forget about you guys type thing. I don't want to be here right now. And he was like, I was just ready for the fight. Like, I just, all right, that should do it. That should stir up something enough for me to at least open up a debate that could get heated. And he's just like, I understand, man. He's like, I love you, and everything is going to be okay, and you're in good hands. God's already, you're already saved. You already got you. You don't even know yet. He's already got you. That type of stuff. And I'm just like chuckling it, laughing off and seething underneath my skin. Like, how dare you say to me that I'm okay? I know I'm okay. I don't need you to tell me. But that conversation with Tyler in the face he gave me when I told him, and just not what I wanted or expected to happen.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Go do it. Go cuss in your car. Right.
Yeah. Just go for it, man. And I was like, all right, I will. And then, anyways, we leave that place and we have conversations on the way home. Okay. It was nice being around good people. The weekend wasn't terrible. And as weeks go on, Christina continues to show that change and keeps getting onto these Bible study sessions with you guys. And I noticed the difference with you guys. And I'm starting to overhear more, listen more, and that kind of stuff. And I don't know. These last couple of years have been very wild to me, very crazy to me. We got into a situation where we're in Pueblo and unhappy in Colorado. At this point, I was like, just starting to think about like maybe praying again, or maybe starting to read the Bible again, or starting to learn about God again. Things are changing, and a lot of good things started happening, which I didn't always acquaint or attribute it to being God, but we were able to move away. We were able to get a house. We were able to come to Florida, be around friends. Like, all these good possible things are happening. Kishan is just saying, I had faith, like, God's going to take care of us, all this type of stuff. And I was like, okay, whatever the case may be. And then somewhere along the way, I can't say that it was just a specific day and moment that something happened, but I noticed in a very quick time span over this last couple of years, towards the earlier time, the miracle that I've been asking God for to defy world made physics and all that kind of stuff finally happened. And I didn't even realize that it was happening at the point, but I'm without a doubt that God changed my heart at some point when I was switching over. And that miracle is greater than him levitating any book in front of my face right now, to change a human's heart like that completely. And I can express, there's a lot of stuff I want to say about my headspace of the type of stuff that I thought, but I will say that there was times when I was at UCF that I was thinking like, how can I be more demonic? And I know that sounds crazy, but I was like thinking, how can I be worse? How can I literally get more even with God, get back at God? How can I be more evil? How can I be worse? Just like the worst headspace you can imagine. I was almost like thinking about making prayers for power and money and just really weird, dark stuff that I started getting into. Is if there's power in the good way, there's power in the bad way. Started thinking about that kind of crazy stuff. So for me to think that my heart is completely changed to an aspect where I can't even fathom being a human being anymore, that miracle of changing my heart was by far greater than any earth-defying miracle I think you could have showed me. And wow, it has absolutely blossomed my life, peace and joy and love, and being able to spread that to some. I would never spread love or kind or comfort to other people. I'm the last person on earth that would have done that back in the day. And now I'm like actively trying to. And thank God I was able to marry a beautiful woman that is able to push those bounds in me, because with her help, I've been able to do things I never would have dreamed of doing. And I'm beyond blessed to this day. And I'm normally not a talker, normally don't like to share life stories, but the fact that I hear so many Death to Life podcasts and seeing this power going on through other people, man, it's undeniable. And I'm such a mathematical black and white guy, but it is so unbelievable, the power of Jesus and that transformation. And I felt like I owed it, that I should be on a podcast, you know, if I was invited on this podcast, be able to tell them that the transformation of the heart, I don't care if it's mathematically quantifiable, it is the greatest power I've ever seen in this world, without a doubt. The power of what Jesus did and what it can do to a human's heart. And my goal is now to go spread that. I truly feel like there is so much more that I can be. I have purpose in life. I have peace in life. And things just wrapped up in a really nice way from these last couple of years after a lot of years in the dark. So,
bro, do you remember, and you said you don't remember a day, mm-hmm. but do you remember what your mind, your idea of who God was, what it mm-hmm. was, and how it was shifting? What was it shifting mm-hmm. towards? God is actually like this instead of like this.
It's crazy, but just reading the Bible a little bit helped a ton. That's where the truth, that's where it's coming from, is the Bible, right? But when you detest religion in the Bible, I was out of the Bible for 8 years at one point. I'd forgotten what it said. You get back into gospel, you get back into what Paul writes in Colossians and Romans. And then Christine, like, showing me word for word what it says. And I'm like, holy cow, he does love me. It's actually undeniable how much he loves me. Look at this. Look at what he's done. Look what he said. And I'm just like, maybe it is true, because this, it doesn't matter what humans tell me, as long as I go by what this book tells me. And then it wasn't even a feeling. It was the concept of it. All I needed was to be told that the concept was wrong of what I believed, and be proven with the Bible that this is the way things are. And once that started becoming more and more clear to me, and the truth starts getting, like, the fog comes away from your eyes and the truth starts getting presented in front of your face, I think that, yeah, I was like, this actually makes a ton of sense. And it just clicked. And I think I didn't need a Bible verse to get me to that point. I didn't need God's miracle to get me to that point. I think I just needed a little love shown to me. I know that sounds, I'm not trying to ask for a pity party, but I think I just needed, which I'm grateful for now, but my wife now, but at the time, she just showed me a little unconditional love. And I think that's all it took at that time, just to like the spark that I am loved. I'm okay. Someone cares for me. That's all it took. Just a little kindness.
Man, I've told this story before, but it's resonating right now. I was sitting with a buddy and we were talking about Kevin Durant. And I don't know if you follow Kevin Durant or his whole thing is that he gets on the internet and he has this burner Twitter account and he just like flames people and he attacks people.
Yep.
And,
yep.
You know, there's this whole thing about how he never won a ring until he got with the Warriors. And me and my buddy were talking about it and I was just like, man, Kevin just needs the gospel. Mm-hmm. And my buddy was like, actually, he just needs unconditional love. And the unconditional love is the thing that opens us up to be able to receive the gospel in the first place. Like, we love because he first loved us. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like God changing Christina's life and allowing her to actually lay her life down, love and all, like, legit love, want your best for you, even though you were being a jerk. Even though you weren't giving it back, you seeing that as the catalyst that changed your life, right? Mm-hmm. Am I wrong? Am I off on that?
No, I think you're spot on. I think your buddy's spot on too. I think a lot of people try to go too far overboard and overload people with info and Bible verses and scripture and what's being said about them, all that. And for a lot of people, that might work. That might be the case. But I think there's a lot of times, especially in the world today, where that gateway is actually just an act of kindness, an act of love, right? And makes a big difference. So I think that sticks in my mind everywhere I go now. If you can just make a little difference, I witness it a ton. Me and my wife go places and she's a lot better about this than me, but she'll offer a tiny bit of graciousness or kindness or patience or empathy or wantingness to listen to these people, just moments of our time. And it turns into a 30-minute life-altering conversation with this person that just needed someone that day to talk to. And I'm like, how many people are out here that are just looking for that touch today, just for that 30 minutes of time? And so I think that's another good thing that I've learned to carry with me since this transformation as well, especially since I've been able to witness it so many times.
So did you decide, oh, we need to get married before you were living in truth or after you were living in truth?
So that's right around the time frame of when it was happening, was right around that marriage. And by the time we got married, so yeah, I got it. Even, yeah. So it was right around that time that I remember, because I told her I wanted to be off nicotine, alcohol, and that kind of stuff for the wedding. And I wanted to be able to go to Florida without that stuff. And that's right around where the transformation was happening. So it was actually perfect timeline for it.
And so, yeah, we were all geeked out. Eddie did your marriage, you guys.
Yes,
we
did.
We were like keeping track. He would send us pictures. And all of us who just have had our lives change, if somebody else is having a life change, we're just like, oh, let me see. Oh, we have FOMO if somebody, like, we're not able to be there.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that whole week and your wedding and just like the truth just being like sealed? Like, you're like, no, this is me.
Yeah. It was, I think it was so new. Like, I cannot explain how drastic of a different person I was to around this time. It's like being shifted. I don't really remember understanding how big of a deal it was or really submitting yourself. I think every year that goes on now, I feel more and more how big of a transformation that was, how big of a deal it is, how much I love God, how much I love me. As even from now to last year, it's so significantly more. I swear, the more that I learn, the more that I find out, I'm just beyond blessed and just so grateful and love God, love Jesus, love God, love people type thing. And yeah, since the wedding, it's been an uphill trajectory and it hasn't slowed down since, for sure. If anything, it's 10 times better than when I was getting married. It's just crazy. I didn't think there was that much. I thought once you learn this kind of stuff and you figure out, you're like, oh, life becomes boring. You believe in God. No, there's so much more to it. Constantly learning, constantly being humbled. And you almost want to. You want to be humbled by God. I'm someone who never wanted to be humbled. I wanted to humble others. Felt good getting that power to humble others. Now I'm like, God, humble me because I have no clue what's going on. Just tell me, please help me, pops. Let me know what's going on. So it's just a breath of fresh air too to be able to see that uphill trajectory climb since the wedding, and just excited for the future with them.
Let me ask you this and we'll wrap it up. If you go back to this kid who's pretty much just, I don't know, high school, where you're just like, F everything, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to die young and leave a pretty corpse. And you could pull that kid to the side and just talk to him for a minute. What would you try to pour into that kid?
Based on his mental state, I think it would have to be hard to tell him a couple things. I think the biggest thing is that I just didn't know that there was a power powerful enough to change a heart. I know that sounds crazy, but I didn't think that you could actually witness someone change that drastically in such a short amount of time. That there was a power in love that was greater than the power in fear that I believed. I wish I could just go back and tell him, bro, there's something so much bigger and more powerful out there than what you're scared of. What you're afraid of right now, there's something so much bigger and more powerful that will dwarf that for you. Don't carry that fear for the next decade of your life and let it eat you up and make you lash out at people. It's hard to say that, but I wouldn't trade for anything. I'm glad that I was able to experience these things to be able to come to the fruition of what I know now.
Well, man, I just want to say thank you so much, because your life has been a blessing and a testimony to all of us. When we think about that weekend, and we talk about, like I said, I've heard the stories of that weekend so much that I tell your story to people all the time. And just to see your life lived is a huge blessing and a testimony to, like, literally all of us who are a part of this ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And so thank you for sharing today, but just being open to receiving his faithfulness. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I'm thanking you for being loved by God.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it is, man. I just want to say thank you. You are a blessing. You are a testimony. If in the future, man, I want to share this, it doesn't have to be anything crazy. It could just be like your good works. Like, this is the thing that Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, your good works people will see and they'll glorify your Father in heaven. It doesn't necessarily mean like an in-depth spiritual conversation.
Yeah.
It just can mean picking somebody up and caring for them. It's love that changes, unconditional love. And man, I'm thanking you, bro. I love seeing your life lived.
your marriage is a testimony and your life is a testimony. So thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
I do appreciate that. And yeah, I think that it's overdue and it needs to be said to you too by me, but I can't. The last year during January, February, March, and April, when I just had come to my new belief and my new love for Jesus, I had no knowledge, no nothing. So I was like trying to get into the Bible, and that's great. Trust me, I had a lot of success there. But hearing the Death to Life podcast was something different. I cannot explain to you. When I wasn't super well educated and rooted, just being able to hear other stories to keep my perspective in check of all these different types of outcomes and situations and paths, it helped quench a lot of questions that I had. They're like, no, this is normal. This is okay. Listen to these stories. I was on a binge tour. I'm telling you, I listened to the same episodes multiple times. It was my gym work. I'm bench pressing, listening to people talk about Jesus. Like, it just soaked in. And I definitely think that helped progress me, and it helped with a bunch of questions and uncertainties I have. And I just want to say thank you for you and what you do and all these episodes. Don't even know it, but for 4 months of my newfound life, I was like, thank you, Rich, for putting out another episode. I just want you to just keep pumping these things out. It made a big difference for me. So thank you for what you do and for bringing these stories to light, because they're helping more people than you know, man.
Man, praise the Lord, brother. That's the humbling thing. And the more we go out here and preach it, man, the more they might not be on the Death to Life podcast, but there's going to be story after story, man. And wow, what a privilege, right? What
Amen.
A privilege that Amen. your story, not even if this episode doesn't publish, it mm-hmm. still will change people's lives. Mm-hmm. And that it's going to be published, it's just going to be that much more. So, mm-hmm. man, praise the Lord. Thank you so much, my friend.
Absolutely. You be easy, Richard.
Yes, sir.
Right.
What's so powerful about this is that it's the simple, unconditional love that changes somebody's life. We can know all the theology in the world, and we can break down, you know, what Romans 6 means and what Romans 7 means. We can have a bunch of gifts, spiritual gifts. We can know all of it, but if we don't understand what unconditional love is, we're just brass, we're a clanging gong. And so if that's where you're at, where you're just like, okay, all I've known in my life is how to proof text somebody and explain this and explain that to somebody, but we're missing the unconditional love, man, you've been loved. And the key to being able to love unconditionally is being unconditionally loved by your Father in heaven. And I want to tell you right now, you have been unconditionally loved. He loves you without restraint. He's kind to you. He's steadfast. He bears long. Like, he loves you. And so if you're hearing this and you want to love in the same way, this is my prayer for you. Father in heaven, reveal that. Reveal that to us, that you have loved us in such a way that we're now able to love. And it's not that we have to run a whole sermon series or start a podcast. We can actually just lay our lives down and seek others' wellness before we think of ourselves. So thank you that you have given this to us, that you have changed us, and so that we can love in the way that you have always loved us. And we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.